And our 6:30 comedy in a minute, Holly Walsh and Lucy Porter, two of the panellists taking part in The Unbelievable Truth.
BBC Sounds.
Inside Number 9 is back on your screens, and that can only mean one thing. Inside Number 9 is back in your ears. I'm Steve Pemberton.
And I'm Rhys Shearsmith. And after each episode on the telly, you can hear our podcast where we go behind the scenes,
giving you an in-depth look into how the shows were created,
and chat to some of the fascinating guests from cast and crew.
We've literally given away every secret.
Yeah, we've possibly said too much. Ruined it.
Inside Number 9. Listen only on BBC Sounds.
Now, I've got an idea. Why don't we spend the next half hour listening to some top-class comedians spinning us a load of nonsense while we try to guess which bits aren't? If you're happy, I am.
We present The Unbelievable Truth, the panel game built on truth and lies. In the chair, please welcome David Mitchell.
Hello and welcome to The Unbelievable Truth, the panel show about incredible truths and barely credible lies. I'm David Mitchell. And thank you to the listener who wrote in to say how this show brightens up the evening shift and takes their minds off their work. That's from Mick and the team at Air Traffic Control. I'm joined by four comedians that mix lies and laughter with a shamelessness rarely seen outside of Prime Minister's questions. Please welcome Tony Hawks, Holly Walsh, Alan Davis and Lucy Porter. The rules are as follows. Each panellist will present a short lecture that should be entirely false, save for five hidden truths which their opponent should try to identify. Points are scored by truths that go unnoticed, while other panellists can win points if they spot a truth, or lose points if they mistake a lie for a truth. First up is Holly Walsh. Holly, your subject is hair. Fine, thread-like filaments that grow from the skin of humans and animals. Off you go, Holly. Fingers on buzzers the rest of you.
Hair. Nobody knows what it is or where it comes from. Just that it's the least popular sandwich filling at Subway. In the 17th century, hair was even used as currency. A locket of blonde hair could be exchanged for goods at most markets. Ginger hair was even more valuable, making it a popular target for thieves and giving us the phrase, caught red-handed.
Lucy.
I feel there's something in there. I'm going to say it's that hair has been used as currency and that red hair was the most valuable of all the hair.
No. Well, it wasn't used as currency, so we don't know if red hair would be the most
valuable.
It would be.
Right.
Why do most brown-haired men that I see grow ginger beards? Why is that?
I think they eat a lot of carrots.
Quite often facial
hair comes out a slightly different colour, doesn't it? I sometimes think there's a little bit of ginger in my beard.
Well, no, I think you've
mainly
missed... Those days
now.
Are gone, David.
Yeah. Yeah, but there used to be a bit of ginger.
You might have ginger nuts in your beard, David.
Yes.
This was the start of a decades-long hair-based US crime wave that led to the arrest in Mississippi of a phantom barber who terrorised residents by breaking into bedrooms at night and cutting people's hair. The incident was memorialised in the movie Shaun of the Dead. This wave only ended with the worst hair crime of all, the wet perm.
Lucy.
I've gone mad for it, but I think there was a criminal who broke in and cut people's hair in America.
There was, In 1942, a small Mississippi town was terrorised by a hair thief known as the Phantom Barber, who allegedly entered his victims' rooms by breaking a window at night and cutting their hair while they were asleep. During a three-week cutting spree, the Phantom Barber entered several homes and a convent, causing a paranoia in the town, which resulted in residents shooting at strangers in their yards.
That's creepy. My husband is always horrified at how much ladies' haircuts cost. If that criminal were at large, he would leave our windows open.
If you could take a tablet and it just meant your hair stayed exactly like that, as it were frozen... Would you take it? I don't know about
facial hair.
We'll get, you'd take
I'd
it. Just,
take
it. Just you'd find a good haircut, give it a couple of days to settle in, tablet, done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you always had the same hairstyle your whole life?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
Exactly.
I changed it when I was 11. So I've had two.
What were you there? Oh, please let it be a pudding bowl. What were you pre-11?
Yeah, it was a pudding bowl.
Yes.
It wasn't as unusual.
I can imagine you with a little pudding bowl.
Yeah.
It would have been very adorable.
I don't think I was that adorable.
It's unlikely you were adorable because it's a hell of a long way from adorable to what you are now.
Anyway, I think it's a good idea. And I think... Come on, scientists. Holly.
By the 18th century, popular hairstyles included the drowned chicken, the cat's arse, the headless monarch, and Milady's Pleasure.
Lucy.
I think there was a haircut called the Lady's Pleasure.
Milady's Pleasure?
Milady's Pleasure. Yeah. I think it was up in the barber's shop. It was one of the pictures.
It's not true.
Yeah.
Tony.
It's got to be the headless monarch.
The headless monarch? No.
No.
Not true, no. Lucy.
Cat's arse.
Nope. Anyone want to have a pop at the drowned chicken? See anyone left?
In for a penny, in for a drowned chicken.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Yay!
Now, you got it in the end, but a very successful section for Holly overall there. The 18th century saw some of the most elaborate hairstyles ever conceived, whose names included the drowned chicken, as well as spaniel's ears, Indian chestnut tree, and sportsman in the bush.
The perm was originally held in place with a mixture of water and cow's wee. In America in the 20s, farmhands used saliva from cattle to hold their quiffs in place, hence the cowlick, and Roman women dyed their hair blonde with pigeon poo, which explains why, to this day, a bird crapping on your head really is good luck if you're looking for an impromptu glow-up.
Alan.
Can it be true about the cow saliva?
Cow saliva causing the cowlick?
Yeah.
It's not true.
Oh, what a shame.
No. Lucy.
Pigeon droppings to bleach your hair.
Correct.
In Roman times.
Well done. In ancient Roman Greece, women would use a variety of ingredients to bleach their hair, ranging from white wine and honey to a blend of pigeon poo, sulfur and quicklime. After applying, the person would then lie in the sun to bake the hair, which often led to a burned scalp, or in some cases, fatal poisoning.
But of course, the sexiest hairstyle ever is the comb-over, as worn by such historical hunks as Alexander the Great, Julius Caesar, Leo Sayer, and Dame Kiri de Kanawa.
Lucy.
Julius Caesar, that was why he combed it all forward.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. I sense a bit of genuine ancient hair knowledge there. Yes, despite his family name Caesar, which means hairy, Julius Caesar struggled with hair loss. Caesar's comb-over, which is mentioned by the Roman historian Suetonius, can be seen on Roman coins of the time.
I would actually find that quite attractive, because like a man who has the confidence to do that, I would think... Yeah,
and he's got the confidence to put it on the... Yeah, put it on the coins. I don't care. I think it's cool.
Yeah.
Thank you, Holly. And at the end of that round, Holly, you've managed to smuggle one truth past the rest of the panel, which is that the perm was originally held in place with a mixture of water and cow's wee before heavy brass rollers and caustic soda were applied. And that means, Holly, you've scored 1 point. We turn now to Tony Hawkes. In 2015, Tony moved to Devon. Great news for us, as we can now book him on the show as part of our regional diversity quota. Tony's first best-selling book follows his chaotic journey all around the coast of Ireland with a fridge. He got the idea from a Hermes delivery driver. Tony, your subject is South Korea, an East Asian nation on the southern half of the Korean Peninsula. Off you go, Tony.
The fun-loving South Koreans are obsessed with theme parks. South Korea is home to a toilet-themed amusement park called the Restroom Cultural Park. Sonland is devoted to the career of South Korean and Spurs footballer Son Heung-min. And there is a sex theme park called Loveland, which features 140 sculptures representing humans in various sexual positions.
Alan.
I'm going for the toilet theme park because I just want it to be true.
It is true. Yes, the Restroom Cultural Park is a toilet-themed amusement park in the city of Suwon. You can see WC signs from around the world, plus fun facts about human waste and a garden containing various scatological sculptures.
Reggae music began in South Korea and was made popular by Bob Marley. His part-time backing group consisted of fisher folk who hunted the great mammals of the deep, and the group was known as Bob Marley and the Dolphinaires. Tony Hawk's performance of South Korean singer Psy's Gangnam Style is so brilliant that Chris Evans got him to do it down the phone on his breakfast show.
Lucy.
I mean, I can entirely believe that you've done a cover of Gangnam Style. We don't need to hear it.
Well, that's not what I said. It's so brilliant that Chris Evans got him to do it down the phone on his breakfast show.
Oh, God, I'm going to have to call it brilliant, aren't I?
You don't have to call it brilliant. What you have to say is that it is sufficiently brilliant to be on Chris Evans' breakfast show. And it is up to the audience to decide how brilliant that would mean it is required to be.
It's got a lot of hours to fill. Yeah,
it's not the same as so brilliant as to win a Nobel Prize.
I'm going to say that it had that level of brilliance.
Yes, it had the required level of brilliance. It is indeed true that it achieved that level of brilliance. And we have a clip.
Best bit of radio of the weekend to you. I'm sorry I haven't a clue. Radio 4, 12 o'clock yesterday. And Tony Hawk's was genius with Gangnam Style. How about this?
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style.
It was actually brilliant.
It's brilliant. Yeah.
Did you get all the lyrics right?
No, I just made it all up. In South Korea, infidelity was made compulsory in 2020, 5 years after adultery was made legal, and ticket sales for Loveland went through the roof.
Holly.
I reckon adultery was legalised in 90s, was it? Or 2000s?
The year he said. Yeah. 5 years before 2020. That's absolutely right.
Yes.
No sooner had the ruling been made than the price of shares in Unidus, a South Korean condom maker, shot up dramatically.
When a South Korean cheats on their spouse, the non-cheating party becomes entitled to sleep with any of the guests that attended their wedding. This could be one of the reasons why they invite so many people to attend these celebrations. In fact, the number of guests at a South Korean wedding is so important that they have fake guest agencies where you can hire people to attend your events.
Alan.
That sounds true.
Yeah, it is true. Well done. In South Korea, it's commonplace to hire fake guests to attend your wedding. The number of guests in attendance is often seen as a matter of status. The average fee per rental guest is around $20, plus food and drink, of course. So, yeah.
Imagine all the people who've met as fake guests and then gone on to be married and then invited other fake guests. Yeah.
Do you think you could have a fake father of the bride, a fake best man?
Fake groom, I would have liked one of those.
Well, you just do the whole thing fake. Yeah. Just, yes, absolutely, yeah.
You could have the whole wedding before a fake god.
Yeah.
The slush puppy was originally invented in South Korea as a nourishing soup, though when the drink was appropriated by the Americans, they used frozen syrup instead of the puppy.
Thank you, Tony. And at the end of that round, Tony, you've managed to smuggle one truth past the rest of the panel, which is that there is a sex theme park called Loveland in South Korea, which features 140 sculptures, some of which are extremely graphic. As there are many taboos surrounding sex in South Korea, the park works as an icebreaker for shy couples. In the early 2000s, couples who had arranged marriages were often sent there on their honeymoon.
With the fake guests.
And that means, Tony, you've scored 1 point. Next up is Lucy Porter. Lucy, your subject is scouting, the worldwide youth movement with an emphasis on practical outdoor activities founded by ex-British Army officer Robert Baden-Powell. Off you go, Lucy.
Scouting for Boys by Robert Baden-Powell was the fourth best-selling book of the 20th century. It sold more copies than Mao's Little Red Book, leaving the communist despot with a big red face and prompting him to include a few camping tips in the second edition.
Holly.
I reckon Scouting for Boys has been an international bestseller and it has probably sold a lot of copies.
So you're going with the...
More than Mao's Little Red Book.
That's not true. Tony.
Fourth best-selling book of the whatever.
That is true. Mao's Little Red Book was the third best-selling book of the 20th century after the Bible and the Quran. But the fourth was Scouting for Boys, with sales of over 150 million copies.
Wow.
That's amazing.
That's more books than I sell in a week.
Some of the rarer scouting badges have included astrology, bear baiting, whistling, call centre management, swan combat, wine tasting, dentistry, marriage guidance, and lying.
Holly.
Whistling.
Mm. No, not whistling.
I was a scout till I was 16.
Yeah. Did you get a whistling badge?
Well, I thought I did. That's what I feel.
No, they were humouring.
Turns out it was just a guy cutting out pictures of lips. So
I'd give that guy a wide berth.
Mick Jagger and Keith Richards met as members of the 3rd Dartford Sea Scouts.
Please let that be true.
No.
Oh.
No.
But he does look like a pirate, so I get why you say that.
Yeah. They'd be honorary Sea Scouts, easy.
Right. Yeah. They, in fact, met at Dartford Railway Station, and there's a blue plaque at the station commemorating their meeting on Platform 2. Yeah.
And back before the Beatles were known as the Beatles, Paul McCartney missed their first performance at the famous Cavern Club because he was away at Scout Camp, his biggest musical mistake until the Frog Chorus.
Tony.
I'm going to go for Paul McCartney being at Scout Camp.
Yeah, go on, Tony.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh. Yes. Yes.
When the first incarnation of the Beatles, the Quarrymen, made their debut at the Cavern Club in 1957, McCartney missed it as he was away at a scout camp in Derbyshire with his younger brother Michael, where they both made their public singing debut.
So there was the Cavern Club before Hamburg then?
Yeah, so it was when they were still the Quarrymen.
I think I've had a stroke.
So... It's going to blow your mind when you find out that people listen to popular music. Yeah, I know,
It's spelled B-E-A-T, by the way, David.
Oh, very clever.
Yeah.
Very clever. And less insecty.
Well, they do. It's got 8 legs.
Yeah.
It's quite.
That's a.
But 4 heads is weird. I mean, that's not an
eight legs. No,
eight legs
it
is
arachnid.
Yeah, exactly. An arachnid. All insects have 6 legs.
6 legs. Yes. Ringo's sitting down, technically.
He's still got 2
not
legs.
Part. He's more of the thorax.
Ringo's the thorax. Everyone else's legs are the legs. And then I suppose the other bits of the other 3 of them are the abdomen. And, you know, I don't know if there are any wings. Though that came later.
Right. David Bowie was also a scout and was profoundly influenced by his pack leader, who sadly died after an incident with a faulty toaster. He is commemorated in the opening lines of Sound and Vision. Baloo, Baloo, Electric Baloo. The darker side of scouting cannot be ignored. When surveyed, 70% of all the arsonists in British prisons said they developed their interest in starting fires through scouting. Every Every single one of Britain's Chancellors of the Exchequer has made it at least as far as the Cubs, and 11 out of the 12 men to have walked on the moon were in the Boy Scouts.
Alan. They're all Scouts went to the moon. The moon people were Scouts.
11 out of the 12 men to walk on the moon were Scouts? Is that...
Yes.
That is true.
Hurrah. Yeah.
Yes, of the 12 men who've walked on the moon, 11 were former Scouts, and all three members of the Apollo 13 mission were Scouts. And that's the end of Lucy's lecture. And at the end of that round, Lucy, you've managed to smuggle two truths past the rest of the panel, which are that some of the rarer Scouting badges have included dentistry. Dentistry is a merit badge awarded to Boy Scouts in America. To gain the badge, you must be able to use X-rays, know about dental decay and gum disease, and know about dental equipment and fluoride. Second truth is that David Bowie... Is that right?
Yeah.
Thank you. was also a Scout. His first ever performance was in 1958 at a Boy Scout camp on the Isle of Wight as a member of the 18th Bromley Scout Troop. That means, Lucy, you've scored 2 points. Famous girl guides include former Tory MP Ann Widdecombe and Icelandic pop star Björk, famed for her banshee-like wailing and shrieking. Ann Widdecombe was a minister in John Major's government. In 2014, the longest-serving girl guide in the UK turned 106. She celebrated by helping her children finally win their Power of Attorney badge. It's now the turn of Alan Davis. Your subject, Alan, is Nicolas Cage, the Academy Award-winning actor and filmmaker. Off you go, Alan.
Nicolas Gawain Faraday Cage... was born in Memphis, Tennessee in 1961. He claims his earliest clear memory is from when he was three and he was fed fox meat stew and sambuca by nuns after a spirited game of spin the bottle of holy water.
Lucy.
Oh, I'd love that nuns thing to be true. I think he was fed fox meat and sambuca by nuns.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. In an interview with the Daily Mail, he says, there were these women dressed in white. I think they were nuns. They gave me something to drink. It tasted a bit like licorice. I'm pretty sure it was sambuca. They also fed me some kind of stew, which was made out of fox meat. In the same interview, he described a recurring dream he had as a child. Quote, I'd be on the toilet and this giant blonde genie woman in a gold bikini would reach into the bathroom window like King Kong and pluck me off the toilet seat and laugh at me. Thankfully, I no longer get that dream. These days, I mostly dream about my father and California grey whales. I must say, as an interviewee, you get something out of it.
He gives good interviewee.
Yeah.
Cage has been seen in an unbroken series of classic box office smash hits. In Ghost Rider, to avoid getting aroused in a love scene with Jennifer Lawrence, he had iced yogurt dripped onto his groin. In The Vampire's Kiss, in order to get aroused for a love scene with Jennifer Beals, Cage requested that hot yogurt be dripped onto his toes.
Tony.
It's a method I always use. And I have a lot in common with Nicolas Cage. But I'm going to go for the frozen yogurt in order to not get aroused.
That's not true.
I am going to go for the hot yogurt to get aroused.
Are you staking a buzz? That's absolutely right. Yes. Yes, according to the film's casting director, Marcia Shulman, to get turned on, Nicolas Cage requested that hot yogurt be poured over his toes while he was doing a love scene with co-star Jennifer Beals.
Why does an actor need to get turned on to act being turned on? It's sort of weird.
I think it's just a way of getting yogurt.
Who's ever heated yogurt? That's what I don't understand. Yeah. What's wrong with custard?
Well, he requested it be poured on his toes while he was doing a love scene with Jennifer Beals. And if you watch the scene, you'll notice his feet are not in shot. So, yeah.
It was while Nicholas was on his quest for the Holy Grail that he drank water from a stream near Glastonbury Tor and swore it tasted like the blood of Christ.
Bristol Water, investigating this claim, had the water professionally tasted by Greg Wallace, who said it hadn't enough seasoning.
Holly.
I bet he did something weird like drink Glastonbury water on a search for the Holy Grail or something in a documentary.
You're absolutely right. Oh. In fact, I don't think it was even in a documentary. I think he just did it. Cage described to the New York Times, again, an easy day's work for that journalist. I started following mythology. For me, it was all about where was the Grail? Was it here? Was it there? Is it at Glastonbury? If you go to Glastonbury and go to the Chalice Well, there's a spring that does taste like blood.
Oh, maybe it's got iron in it.
Yeah, or maybe Nicolas Cage is crazy. Alan.
Cage once dreamt that a naked man was standing at the foot of his bed eating a fudge ice cream. He was convinced the dream was prophetic, and so it proved when he woke up to find a naked man standing at the foot of his bed eating a fudge ice cream.
Holly.
I reckon he had a dream and he woke up and he saw this guy at the end of his bed eating an ice cream.
So you're saying both things are true?
I'm erring on the edge of the guy at the end of his bed eating an ice cream.
Well, that's what's true, so I'm giving you the point. According to Cage, I opened my eyes and there was an... According to Cage, talking to TV quick. I opened my eyes and there was a naked man wearing my leather jacket eating a fudgesicle in front of my bed. Cage said he managed to keep the man talking until the police arrived. I can believe he did.
While he was filming Bringing Out the Dead, Cage was stalked by a mime who would follow the star everywhere, battling against an invisible wind. Eventually, security men caught the stalker and locked him in a glass box. At the end of the shoot on Willy's Wonderland, the cast and crew clubbed together to give Nicolas Cage a parting gift. It was a box of frogs.
Thank you, Alan. And at the end of that round, Alan, you've managed to smuggle one truth past the rest of the panel, which was that while he was filming Bringing Out the Dead, Cage was stalked by a mime wearing white face paint. He says, I don't know where he's saying this, I'm going to imagine it was on Sunday brunch. I was being stalked by a mime, silent but maybe deadly. Somehow, this mime would appear on the set and start doing strange things. I have no idea how it got past security. The producers took some action, and I haven't seen the mime since. That's a happy ending.
That's so weird.
And that means, Alan, you've scored 1 point. Nicolas Cage says he only eats animals that he considers have sex in a dignified manner. And is very particular about what he puts in his mouth. Nuts, crackers and fruitcake are just some of the things he's been called. Which brings us to the final scores. In fourth place, with no points, we have Tony Hawks. In joint second place, with 1 point each, it's Lucy Porter and Alan Davis. And in first place, with an unassailable 3 points, it's this week's winner, Holly Walsh. That's about it for this week. Goodbye.
The Unbelievable Truth was devised by John Naismith and Graham Garden and featured David Mitchell in the chair with panellists Tony Hawks, Holly Walsh, Alan Davis and Lucy Porter. The chairman's script was...